It's Twin Bills, the Red Sox podcast from the sports department of the Providence Journal, featuring Red Sox beat writer Bill Koch, along with sports editor Bill Corey. Now, Twin Bills.
Hello and welcome to this week's Twin Bills Red Sox podcast. This is Bill Corey, the sports editor of the Providence Journal. With me is the Red Sox beat writer Bill Koch. And Bill, what a difference a week makes.
Yeah, last week we came into the podcast with a fair amount of optimism, and this week it's going to be a slightly saltier edition of
not
the Twin
so
Bills.
Much. Yeah, if we can go back in time and revisit last week when we were doing this, the Red Sox were 5-2, beginning a very important stretch in their schedule. Tampa Bay, the Yankees, and since then, Bill, I think they won one game. 1-9 in their last 10 games. Obviously, last night's game, meaning Wednesday night's game.
Correct.
Does not have a result as of yet. Went to extra innings. It started raining. The game has been suspended. They're going to make it up, or they're going to finish it, rather, August 22nd, I believe.
Correct.
And why they even do that, well, we can get into that a little bit as well. But, boy, Red Sox fans, it's been a while since you really haven't had to pay attention to the team, and it's fast heading in that direction.
Yeah, with the Patriots opening their preseason tonight against the Lions, I would imagine that a lot of fans in the region are going to be pivoting to Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the boys pretty quickly here. And the Red Sox really have no one but themselves to blame. Being swept at home by Tampa, finishing 1-8 against the Rays at Fenway Park this year, and then the disaster in New York this weekend, obviously, being swept in a four-game series, you find yourself now significantly adrift in the wild card race of the Rays and the A's, you know, and it's going to take a serious amount of work and now a fair amount of luck and help from the other teams involved for you to reach the postseason again.
Right, right. And boy, it just unraveled so quickly too. You know, they were off to that good start, and then the trade deadline came and nothing happened. And so let's unpack that a little bit, Phil.
Okay.
So you and I had been saying all summer long that they could definitely use another arm in the bullpen.
I think everyone's been saying that.
Right?
I don't think we've been alone.
No, we weren't the only people who discovered that.
No.
But lo and behold, trade deadline comes and goes. Dave Dombrowski does nothing and then tells everybody that you know, if they had only been playing a little bit better, maybe they would have made a commitment, which I thought was an awful message to send. I mean, you know, I understand to some degree you're saying, hey, this is the same team as last year. Why aren't you guys as good? But by the same token, if you're a player and you know what the problem is, and that's been the pitching, and they don't do anything to address it, although I guess they could say, well, we did go and get Andrew Cashner. But I don't think that's what the players think of as a deadline move. My feeling is that it had to be demoralizing, and they haven't been doing anything on the field to convince me otherwise.
No, if you want to hang your hat on Andrew Cashner for the trade deadline, he has an ERA above 750 in his five starts with the Red Sox. Has given up seven home runs in those five starts. Has only won one of them, ironically enough, against the Yankees, the team that he said he wanted to pitch against. I guess the other four opponents he didn't really want to pitch against. The difficult thing for the Red Sox is, I think, the expectation. I firmly believe that Alex Cora and his players thought that they were going to make a move, just like Tampa, Oakland, and Cleveland did.
Mm-hmm.
They thought an addition was coming. I go back to the day before the deadline. Alex Cora said, we're talking to people and there's a lot of stuff going on. Let's see what happens. Like I said on Sunday, every team is looking to improve. David Price said, I look forward to seeing what happens tomorrow. I think everybody else does too. There's expectation in those statements. There's hope mm-hmm. in those statements. And when you're told all the way along by Alex Cora, by Dave Dombrowski, yes, we believe in you. We think you're a good team. We think that there's talent in this clubhouse. We think that you can get back to the postseason. When you don't strengthen at the deadline like your rivals in the wild card race do, it just sends an awful message. Now, that doesn't excuse the fact that the Red Sox have lost 9 of their last 10. You know, as Cora said, you still have to go out and perform on the field. There's still a lot of talent here. The Yankees blew it in an attempt to get a starting pitcher, which they desperately needed, mm-hmm. and they're still playing well. Obviously, two teams in different positions, but his point remains the same. You still need to go out and be professionals. But I do think that they were quite disappointed at their inaction at the deadline.
Yeah, and talk about the Yankees for a second, and I've heard that a lot. Well, the Yankees didn't do anything either. The Yankees are in first place and have a 10-game lead in the American League East. Now, I agree that their starting pitching could certainly be their Achilles heel come playoff time. But they certainly were not in the same dire straits that the Red Sox are.
No.
I mean, the Red Sox season was pretty much hanging in the balance in those 2 weeks. And for the front office to not do anything, sends, I think, as you said, kind of a message to the team that, yeah, you're really not that important to us, or we don't really believe in you enough.
Right.
Even if it was a minor move, even if it was a middle relief guy, it would have been something that they could point to. And it's been a long time, Bill, and we talked about this before we did the podcast, when, August, second week of August rolls around and you're kind of losing interest in the Red Sox because the last several years they've been in the hunt, they've won the division, they've obviously gone and won the World Series last year. I think it was, 2015 when it's been that long since they've basically been out of it.
Yeah, 2015, which was also the last time they had an 8-game losing streak, was July 2015.
Yep.
You had Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts were both 22-year-olds on that team. Joe Kelly made 25 starts on that team.
Wow.
Henry Owens made 11.
Jeez, a blast from the past, Henry Owens.
You also
right.
had Wade Miley in that rotation.
Yep.
So you get an idea of what kind of team that was. They finished 78-84.
Yep.
They were under .500 virtually the whole season. And that 8-game losing streak in July pretty much doomed them to finish under .500.
Yeah.
But at the very least on that team, you could see some young pieces who might have been in the ascendancy. You had just won the World Series in 2013.
Yep.
It was sort of a necessary, I don't want to say rebuild, but reshaping of the roster maybe. You were in the process of moving on from Pablo Sandoval and Ruston Castillo, and you were trying to turn over some very high-dollar mistakes there.
Right, and the difference there, if you want to go back to the previous championship in 2013, the difference between that championship and last year's championship was that last year's championship, you looked at that roster and you said, wow, there are all these great young players that should be with the team for several years to come.
Right.
And you felt like this was the beginning of a somewhat dominant period. Whereas in 13, you kind of had all these guys that were sort of thrown together.
Right.
Yes, you had, in 15 you had Mookie Betts, I think, and Xander.
Yep.
But they were very young players. In 13, you had the Shane Victorinos and Jared Saltalamacchia.
Johnny Gomes.
These are not people that were going to be sort of part of the Red Sox future for very long.
It was sort of David Ortiz and a bunch of spare parts.
Exactly. And a few great hits in the playoffs from some other guys. But that was almost like a great kind of one-off surprise.
Yes.
Whereas last year's, I think you had the sense of these guys are going to be good for a long time. And then to come back this year and have this kind of season, and they're over .500. It's not a losing team, but, you're third in the East. That doesn't look like you're going to get to the playoffs. It is, I think, to me, much more disappointing than those years where, like in 14 and 15 when, you weren't very good. This team is supposed to be good.
And I think the players would agree with you. I think they've felt like they've been stuck in second or third gear all season.
Mm.
And there was a reasonable expectation in the spring when you looked at the roster on paper and you thought, okay, they didn't really lose that much. They didn't really add anyone, but they didn't really lose that
they
much.
They didn't have Kimbrel, and Kimbrel was, at times a heart attack last year anyway, and you kind of sensed, well, if they don't figure it out, they'll go out and get somebody by the deadline, and, well, that didn't happen.
Right.
But for the most part, yeah, you're right. You looked at the lineup, and you're like, well, everybody's back.
The lineup was pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. You were thinking about a full year of Nathan Eovaldi in the starting rotation.
Which looked good at the time.
Obviously, that didn't work. He went on the IL on April 18th and hasn't started a game since. You look at what's happened in the bullpen. They haven't really settled on roles for these guys. They've missed the playoff performance of Joe Kelly. Certainly not the regular season, right. But the postseason version. And just their inaction, I think, to address an obvious area of need. The starting pitching has not been good. The ERA, I think, through 114 games, the starting pitching ERA was over 5,
right,
which is unacceptable. A lot of that has to do with that fifth starter spot, which they were trying to fill in for Valdi. But it has just as much to do with how bad Rick Porcello and Chris Sale have been. You know, they both looked very human this season. Porcello going into his walk year in a contract, and Sale starting his 5-year extension next season.
Yeah.
So that's a big question going forward about whether or not he can recapture what he had. So it's sort of been this convergence of factors that led them to the deadline, playing reasonably well, 15-7 in the last 22.
Yeah, I mean, they were keeping their head above water.
25-13 in the last 38. They're right there with the Rays and the A's in the wild card race, and you don't make a move. And all of a sudden, the feeling around the team, you know, and the players haven't said this. They're professionals. They're not going to disparage the front office publicly, at least not yet, at least not on the record. But the feeling around the players was, we were going to add someone. What happened?
Yeah,
everybody else did. Like, we couldn't even get David Phelps or somebody like that.
Right, somebody that wouldn't blow through the luxury tax threshold, because you still had, what, $5 or $6 million to play with there.
And that's the other side of this debate, and I think we spin it now to Dave Dombrowski and his future.
Yeah.
You look at what happened with the Red Sox last season at the deadline. They went through the luxury tax because they were leading. They were in first place. They were 30 games over 500, I think, by the deadline. And that was obviously, as you referred to them several times, a wagon. A team that was rolling over opponents, dominating games, winning in all forms and fashions. You had Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez both on MVP tracks. You know, starting rotation was good. Bullpen was capable.
Right, and
good enough.
That was the big cry last year, is go add a bullpen arm, which they didn't do at the deadline. I mean, they went and got Nathan Eovaldi, and that became a bullpen arm, but we didn't know it at the time.
Right. They made subtle tweaks at the deadline last year by getting Pierce, by getting Kinsler, by getting Eovaldi. Went through the luxury tax, or the competitive balance tax, if you want to be formal about it.
I like the word luxury, yeah.
I do, too. Sort of had the blessing of ownership to go through the tax because you felt like you had a real contender. You gave away the draft spots to do that. You also paid a stiff financial penalty to do that. This season, you're 20 games worse than you were last year going into the deadline, 15, 20 games worse.
Yeah.
Dave Dombrowski said in his press conference on the trade deadline day that he didn't even approach ownership and ask them whether or not he could go through the tax because he knew what the answer was going to be. This team is different. They're not what they were last year. They're not prohibitive World Series favorites at this point with the Dodgers, I think you could say, and the Astros last season.
Sure.
So are we going to mortgage the future on a team that hasn't really shown us in 4 months?
Yeah.
And so there wasn't going to be the sort of impact addition that some other teams made, certainly not like Houston made when they got Zach Greinke.
Right.
But like you said, there seem to be some alternatives out there. You know, maybe a guy who could pitch the sixth inning or a guy who could pitch the seventh inning ahead of Matt Barnes and Brandon Workman and Nathan Eovaldi and Darwinson Hernandez. Just another guy to add to the mix, maybe. You know, someone who you could bring in, let's say, in the fourth inning. Mm. If one of your starters got in a jam and it was a game that you really needed. Their lack of proactivity in that way, I think, is probably the worst look for this team so far this season.
Well, I think, you know, it goes beyond just adding somebody to the roster. You know, now we don't know what these other teams were asking. It could be that, you know, when they were dealing with the Red Sox, they said, well, we'd give you this guy, but we want Benintendi.
Right.
Or we want, you know, JBJ and Benintendi, or we want your best prospect and some, you know.
Sure.
So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, we don't know exactly what the Red Sox were up against. But beyond that, it does send a message to the team, I think, that if they did do something, then the team, I think, would say, well, they believe in us to some degree.
Right.
They did what they could do. They didn't want to blow through the luxury tax, but they did get us this guy to put in the bullpen. You know, they believe in us, so let's, you know, we believe in ourselves. And who knows, maybe they wouldn't be 1-9 since then.
Right.
And, you know, it's been reported now in Dan Shaughnessy's column of a few days ago that he would be surprised that Dave Dombrowski will be back next year. And I can't say that would surprise me that they would part ways with him. I think Dave Dombrowski did a great job when he first came here. He took over an organization that was kind of a mess, wasn't it?
It was.
And, you know, he made some changes. He eventually got it, he hired his own manager, which by all accounts we feel is a pretty good hire. Won the World Series.
Right.
Team sets a franchise record in wins. But, boy, it seemed to turn really quickly.
Yeah, and I think the bigger issue here is, Bill, is that you're looking at what's going to happen in the future. Beyond this season, into 2020, into 2021. You have some major questions to address as an organization. Do you want Dave Dombrowski answering them? I think that's what this comes down to. He has 1 year left in his contract. Is he the guy to bring you into the sort of next generation of Red Sox players? That's the question you ask yourself if you're John Henry. He's on record to WEEI saying that he doesn't believe in bringing managers or general managers into the last year of their contract. He doesn't want any lame ducks.
Right.
He feels you either get extended or you part company and move on.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Henry and I think to myself, how did John Henry make his fortune? Before he bought a baseball team, before he bought Liverpool Football Club, how did he make his money?
He's a hedge fund guy, right? He bought and sold futures.
In futures.
Yeah.
So assets that were at the bottom that eventually could appreciate.
Mm.
And when you look at the Red Sox team over the last couple of years, you're seeing the talent on the field, the homegrown players that they have, Benintendi, Bradley, Betts,
right.
Bogarts, Devers, Vasquez, now Chavis has come through. Cheap, controllable, affordable assets who are outperforming their contracts.
Right.
That's what John Henry values in terms of building an organization. That's why he hired Theo Epstein as his general manager. That's his prototype, a guy who can develop young players, but who also has an eye for maybe an undervalued free agent or a fit free agent. You know, someone who you can bring in who's going to fit into your existing roster, your existing culture. You need to be able to evaluate that as well. The luxury of working in Boston is you have the financial muscle to spend,
right,
if you wish.
Spend they have,
and that brings us back to Dave Dombrowski. You look at the contracts he's given out to David Price, to Chris Sale at this point.
Yeah, the extension.
How are those going to look in 3 or 4 years? John Henry's looking at that, and he's thinking, we're up at the luxury tax because of deals like that.
Right.
Now, signing Xander Bogaerts was a wonderful piece of business. Dombrowski deserves credit for that.
Sure.
Without question. But you're looking at Sale, Price, Eovaldi, Steve Pearce for this season.
Mm.
He gave Eduardo Nunez a 2-year deal. The second year was a player option, which Nunez activated.
Right.
That was another $6 million. These are all accumulating costs that prevent you from being involved at the deadline. On top of that, by going over the luxury tax last year, Dombrowski cost himself 10 spots in the draft, cost himself the 33rd pick in the draft.
Right.
If they were to go over the tax again, right now they're in the teens, the 20s, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
You go all the way down to the 30s with a team that's looking like you need to retool a little bit. You need that 10 spots of capital.
Sure.
So Henry's looking at, who's going to develop the farm system here? Why didn't he see Michael Chavis coming? Why did he sign Steve Pearce for $6 million when this kid's going to come up and hit 25 home runs and have a chance to be someone who can be in our lineup for a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to make a decision on Brock Holt and replace him with Marco Hernandez if it's going to cost us $5 million as opposed to $600,000?
Right.
You know, who's going to make that choice? And so I think Henry is looking at that and thinking, do I have someone who's going to evaluate our assets properly and move forward into 2020, 2021, and make the real big decisions on players like Mookie Betts?
Well, that hasn't been the track record of Dave Dombrowski.
Correct.
He's been in baseball long enough now that people know what his track record is. And he's been a successful general manager, hadn't won a title. I take that back. He was with the Marlins when they won, right?
Correct.
But generally speaking, he's known as the guy who comes in and signs big money free agents, not a great farm system developer kind of guy, and I think we've seen that as of late.
It should be said, though, they have improved this year. Their last couple drafts have been better than
where they had been. They're not great.
No, according to Baseball America.
It's going to take a while to get up in the top 10 or so. They're like, 22nd or something?
According to Baseball America's midseason update, they're at 22.
Yeah.
They started the year at 30. They do have some nice pieces there. Obviously, Chavis graduated and is someone who you look at as he's got a hole in his swing at the top of the zone, but he does have some tools there and some intangibles that you like. You've got younger guys like Tristan Cassis, like Bobby Dalbec, like Jaron Duran. Brian Maddow is a right-handed pitcher in Portland. All those guys are promising prospects.
Sure.
You also look at Darwins and Hernandez, who they signed for $7,500 out of Venezuela. That's great value.
Absolutely.
You give major credit there to Eddie Romero, who was their director of international scouting and is now their assistant GM, and someone whose name came up in Shaughnessy's column as a potential replacement for Dombrowski. Romero knows the farm system very well, can obviously develop young talent.
Yeah.
But that's certainly part of the discussion.
And, another thing, too, this certainly doesn't fall into Dave Dombrowski's lap, but, you were taking over a payroll with some dead money in there, too. So you were already kind of at a disadvantage. You had the Pablo Sandoval money that you were spending. The Dustin Pedroia contract, it doesn't look like it's getting any value there out of him.
Should we get into our next topic there after you finish your point here?
Yeah. We'll jump into PD in a second.
Mm.
But you're sort of already climbing toward that first threshold in luxury tax because of past decisions that were bad ones. And you can argue now that with some of these recent signings, you're right. He's had some good ones and not so good ones, but the Sale one, it sticks out now because of the season he's had. Now, look, he's young enough. Maybe he bounces back and has another really good year or two, but it doesn't look like it's trending that way.
I think he finds it. I think he's better than this.
I think he's better than this, too. I don't know
if he's the eraser he was in 2015,
right.
But I think he's better than this.
Yeah. I don't know that Dave Dombrowski is going to be around to see that.
That's right. That's right.
And
the Sandoval money, for those who might be wondering, that finally comes off the books after this year.
After this season.
That's
right.
Over $18 million
wow.
that you're going to get rid of, which is going to be very nice.
Yeah. So let's talk about Dustin Pedroia, who had another knee operation this week. The Red Sox say that it was successful, whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
But it just sounds more and more like he's not going to play again.
Yeah, the current one, let me pull up my notes here, because I want to make sure I get the medical term right. Left knee joint preservation.
That doesn't sound good.
No, it's essentially, I read up on this a little bit yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I stumbled across an article published by the Cleveland Clinic. It's a renowned medical facility. It was published in August 2017, and it was debating the merits between left knee joint preservation and total knee replacement.
Okay.
Joint preservation is essentially the step that you would take before you decide to have total knee replacement. It essentially puts in a sort of cement, and it sort of fills in if you have any stress fractures or any cracking in the joint.
I see.
They also reportedly, according to Rob Bradford of WEI, they shaved down a couple bone spurs that were in there. You can just imagine what happens if you're a surgeon and you're performing an operation on Pedroia's knee, and you open him up and you look and you see the work that's been done already, whether it be the cartilage restoration or now the joint preservation, the amount of scar tissue and bone spurs and loose bodies and whatever else that you're going to find in that joint. He's been traumatized, really. I don't think there's any other way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're talking about an operation that is one step short of a full knee replacement, which obviously no professional athlete could play with.
Right.
I think you get an idea of where this is going.
Right, and we're not talking about somebody who is 29 or 31 or 32. He's going to be, what, 30?
He turns 36 at the end of this month.
Right. So, if everything goes as well as could possibly be expected and he bounces back and he's ready for spring training, you're looking at a 37-year-old second baseman. And who could sort of, get in the way or of the development of somebody like Michael Chavis if you want to, you know, stick with Chavis at second base.
Sure.
So you know, the news when I saw the news yesterday that he had another procedure, I just thought that, well, this, I mean, I hope it works out well for Pedroia, but to me it just sounds like this is another step toward retirement.
Yeah, he's been on indefinite leave from the team, I think, since the end of May. I want to say it was around Memorial Day weekend when he left and went home to Arizona to be with his wife and his three sons. When I think about Pedroia's situation right now, what I really hope for him is that he's able to physically play with his kids.
Yeah, right.
For the rest of his life.
Sure.
He's got three boys. They're all under 10. I hope he can play catch with them in the backyard.
Yeah.
I hope that he can roughhouse with them in the backyard and play touch football and do all those things that fathers do with their sons, because this is a quality of life issue. This is beyond him playing baseball again, because I think his press conference at that time when he left the team, he said everything but the word retirement.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was everything but.
Right.
And I think everyone knows. He's played 9 games in 2 years. You know, let's see if I can pull up some numbers here that I published yesterday. He's played 9 games in 2 years. He hasn't been an all-star since 2013. He's had an OPS of better than 800 once since 2011.
Hmm.
So this hasn't been a great player for a long time. This hasn't really been a good player for a long time.
No, he hasn't played for a long time.
No, this is a guy who, you know, has been off the field, who's been more ceremonial and more representative than he has been practical. And it's sad to see a player like that who gave so much to the franchise reduced to this. And I think that's why the Red Sox have gone out of their way to give him every opportunity to try to come back. And they've gone out of their way to say, we still believe in him, we still think he can get here. Alex Cora, as his former teammate and as a former player, he knows what it means when someone in a position of authority, whether it be a general manager or a manager, comes out and declares you baseball dead. Says, well, we're not thinking about Petey anymore. Right. You know, we're going to move on. That's a devastating blow for a player. It's something that they don't want to hear. And so the Red Sox have been very careful about this, but I think in the offseason, there needs to be serious discussions between them and Pedroia, because you have realistic financial stakes at play here.
Yeah, it's not insignificant, right?
Not at all.
Right.
His value, his average annual value for 2020 and 2021, $13.75 million against the tax. You get a real nice player for $14 million.
Absolutely, absolutely. Before we head toward the end of this week's podcast here, Bill, I wanted to rant a little bit about last night's game. Last night was the Kansas City Royals Red Sox game that went to extra innings, and then when the top of the 10th inning rolled around, you were there, I was not. The rain was coming down pretty heavy. I was watching your comments as well as others on Twitter, how there was almost a moat being formed around the infield. And so the Red Sox, I shouldn't say the Red Sox decided, but it was decided that the game would be suspended after how long? About an hour or so? How long of a wait before they made the decision?
It was almost 2 hours.
That long?
Yeah.
That they would suspend the game and continue it, in other words, pick it up in the top of the 10th inning, at a mutual day off, which was August 22nd, I think.
Correct.
Why the hell are you playing this damn game? You know, look, I understand if they need it for the standings, all right, but the Kansas City Royals certainly don't need it for their standings.
No,
right?
They're
41-74.
Right.
You know, and at this point, the Red Sox, who are 60-56 and 6 games out of the wild card, it doesn't look like they're going to need it for their standings. Now, look, I understand that maybe there are some other vested interests with a little bit of money on the line that might, you know, really want this game to be played. But is that what the driving force here is? Why not just sort of suspend it indefinitely? And once you get to September, it'll probably be crystal clear as to whether or not you need this game in the standings. And if you do, then schedule it. But anyway, that's my rant. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things wrong with baseball, and this is one of the things that they're so inflexible about their tradition. Oh, no, we can't have a tie. Why the hell not? You know?
Right.
Why the hell not just call it a tie? Or at least at this point, just say it's indefinitely suspended. We'll make a decision in September. And then if you need to, you know, if it doesn't matter, just call it a tie. The fact that you're going to pick an off day for both teams, have them come back and start up in the top of the 10th inning is silly.
You done?
I'm done.
You good?
I might have more in me, but that's it.
A little more red than when you started. That's outstanding.
Well, I was driving home listening to this. I'm like, this is just stupid. I mean, I'm driving home from here, from Providence. I wasn't there, unlike you, who, you know, you had to endure that and then post something on the site and all that. But, you know, it's just stupid.
You know, people think that we're sitting up there and it's dreadful and we're waiting and we're waiting. I watched a movie. You got internet there.
Right. How many fans were sticking around?
There were a few hanging around, like, up undercover and in the concourse.
Yeah, I suppose if you're on vacation or whatever, you know, they've got the concession stands open. What else are you going to do?
Do you really want to walk to your car?
It was pouring. Right.
You know, I waited until it actually stopped raining about 2 o'clock in the morning and went to my car.
Yeah.
I had an umbrella, but it was coming down sideways, and you got the idea that once I didn't finish the game in 9 innings, it had started to shower a little bit in the 8th and 9th, and then it really started to come down in the 10th. They waved the players off the field. They had a window that they thought would last until about 11. They were about 15 minutes short of that, and once the game went into the 10th inning, it didn't look good, and it was just, I mean, it was pouring, and they were not going to be able to play on that field.
And, you know, I get it. It's the last game of a homestand or the series with Kansas City.
Well, that's the issue. You know, the Royals don't come back.
Right. I mean, if they were playing again today, then I think it was simple. You just pick up the game in the 10th inning, at, you know, start at 1 o'clock and then do a separate admission. But
correct.
I understand that was not the case, but still, you know, you'd have to really convince me hard that this game is going to be worth playing.
Well, and the Red Sox players aren't happy about this. And, you know, as Cora said after the game, the 22nd was supposed to be an off day for them in San Diego. They're playing the Phillies at home on the 21st. They have a series that weekend with the Padres at Petco Park. They were going to travel after the Phillies game, which is a night game, and have a full Friday off or Thursday off in San Diego.
Right.
So like Cora said, there's no Legoland, there's no Marina, there's no SeaWorld, there's none of that now.
Right.
You know, we're stuck here playing the Royals for, could be one inning.
Yeah.
Could be 6 out.
Yeah, you're right. It could be 10 minutes, right?
You know? So I think he's in your camp. Either you finish the game at the time or you let it go until the end of the year and you see if you really need it.
Right.
The sad thing is that you sit there and you think about it. The Red Sox had a 4-2 lead. Darwin's and Hernandez gives up a run in the 6th.
And he had been pretty good as of late, as you wrote in your sidebar today. He had been really good, and then, you know, obviously it got to him yesterday.
Well, this is what happens. You write nice things about a guy, and then he goes out and blows up.
That'll teach you.
You know, I wrote about Eduardo Rodriguez the day before. He only throws 5 innings. So sure enough, you know, writers feel like the kiss of death. At least I certainly do. Hernandez, since his recall, 10 innings, 1 earned run, 20 strikeouts.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff is going to play. It's
sure,
in your bullpen.
Absolutely.
And then in the 7th inning, Nathan Eovaldi gives up another run on a single and a lame grounder up the middle that Brock Holt dives for and can't get.
Yeah.
So you're at 4-4, and Julian McWilliams, who writes for the Boston Globe, who sits to my right, he says, "Oh man, this is going extra innings now, isn't it?" And I was like, "Julian, how dare you?
Don't even say that."
Sure enough, Julian was right. You know, we're sitting there in the 9th, and it starts to rain, and one of the weather stations in Boston puts up a picture of the radar, and it's all sorts of reds and oranges coming toward Boston. And it's like, oh no, no, this isn't good. Mookie Betts singles to lead off the 9th.
Yeah.
You're thinking you got Devers, Bogarts, Martinez. You might be able to walk this off. They all make outs.
Yeah.
You go to the 10th, and you know what happens from there. A pretty miserable night, obviously, at Fenway. I guess the only redeeming quality that you have to the end of this homestand is that Mike Trout's here for 4 games.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, best player in the league, and you get a chance to see him in Boston. That's certainly that's always a treat. But, you know, it's more of a treat if your team is actually in the race.
Yeah, last year when Mike Trout came here, I think the Red Sox did a number on him. You know, pretty certain that they might have swept the Angels last season.
Yeah, I think they at least they won the series. They might have swept too.
And I guess, you know, if you pull up the Angels salary situation. If you're a Red Sox fan, you can control yourself and say, well, at least we're not them. You know, we're not paying Albert Pujols $100 million over the next 3 years.
Right.
You know, we're not paying Justin Upton whatever it is.
Right, and when's the last time the Angels got to World Series, right?
Right. So. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, but Trout, you know, you want to look at Trout and think he just turned 28. He's on track to being one of the 5-10 best players of all time.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, his numbers are just insane. He's going to run away with the American League MVP
this year.
This year. You know, it's not even really going to be that close. He could and probably should be unanimous if you're going to have the voting right now.
Mm.
There's really no one.
Nobody else, really, I think, you know.
You know, but it's sad to see Trout commit his future to the Angels and sign a mega extension, which he did.
Yeah, you know, we say that. I don't know how sad it is if you're Mike Trout. There are some people who I think would rather not be in the spotlight and you know, walking down the street and everybody. I'm sure Mike Trout can put on a pair of sunglasses or a cap and walk around L.A. and probably not be bothered all that much.
The only place that Trout really gets any notoriety is when he goes to Eagles playoff games. He's a South Jersey guy.
Right, that's right.
He's a big Philadelphia Eagles fan.
Right.
He was at all those games when they won the Super Bowl that year, beating the Patriots. He's probably the most famous fan they have at this point. You know, but really, he comes back here in the off season with his wife and stays on the East Coast and stays in winter, which for someone who lives in California, a little strange.
Yeah.
But I always thought that he would come back and, you know, potentially go to the Yankees.
Right.
And I think that at some point, Trout's played in one playoff series, I want to say. I think he went 1-for-12. Your legacy is made on championships and what you do in the postseason. And I'm really interested to see what happens, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years into this deal when Trout is into his early 30s, if the Angels haven't necessarily had any success. If he's going to have any regrets, you know, publicly or privately,
right.
You know, if the Angels decide that maybe they're going to shop him at some point.
Yeah.
And I think Trout's situation is instructive for people who are looking at Mookie Betts, someone who I think should probably be paid something in between Harper and Trout. Mm. I think he's probably in the middle there in terms of his ability and his future going forward. The Angels were able to get a deal done with Trout before he hit free agency. The Nationals were not with Harper.
Mm.
You know, and the notion of Washington allowing Harper to walk while getting nothing is one that's being discussed around Betts right now.
Mm-hmm.
This offseason is going to be really important in that regard, and I just think that, you know, it goes back to the Dave Dombrowski question. Does John Henry want him making that decision?
Well, we will find out. We'll have a lot to speculate about because I'm not sure we're going to be worrying about the pennant race here in the next over the next couple of months. Bill, I'm sure we'll be figuring things out to talk about. We'll do this again in a week. In the meantime, as you mentioned, Patriots start their preseason this evening, and a little plug here for the Barrington Little League team, which is playing, I believe, right now in the East region down in Bristol, Connecticut. So hopefully they can get themselves into the final this weekend.
Yeah, you know, Little League Baseball, obviously great this time of year. You start thinking of Williamsport. The Red Sox will be there next year.
That's right.
Playing in the Little League Classic against the Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
They'll play at the Phillies Class A affiliate, which is also in Williamsport. I think it's August 23rd,
mm-hmm.
which I would imagine would be right in the middle of the Little League World Series. Or towards the end.
So what happens if that game goes to 10 innings and then it really rains hard?
They suspend it.
Do they have to go back to that field to finish it?
Ideally, they'd go back to Camden Yards. It is an Orioles home game. You know, maybe they'll build a dome in the interim.
Right, in the cornfield.
Yeah, I'm sure that Susquehanna Bank Park has the... has the budget for such a thing, but that'll be a real nice thing for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
I know the Pirates played in the game in 2017. Cora's older brother Joey is their third base coach,
mm-hmm.
and he said it was a great experience.
Yeah.
They bring the players to meet the kids who are playing in the Little League World Series, and Yeah, that's a great experience.
Sure. It's great.
You know, for people who haven't been in clubhouses in the major leagues, when the action's going on in Williamsport, those games are on. The players are watching them.
Oh, absolutely.
The players are marveling at how good the 12-year-olds are.
Absolutely. It's a great take. It always is. It's great to watch on TV. You're always pulling for the local kids. You know, it's tough to see when the kids, you know, who maybe make an error or do something to lose the game. But, you know, I think there's a lot of understanding. We all understand that these are not big league players. And, you know, it's always great when a Rhode Island team gets there.
And we've been very lucky recently, you know, whether it be Cranston or Coventry or Warwick North, 3 years in a row Rhode Island was represented in Williamsport. Let's see if the Barrington kids can add to that legacy.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. Bill, thanks again for another Twin Bills, and we will do this again in a week.
All right, Bill.